95 points.
Listener-driven radio.
The following is an encore presentation from CKUW's archives. Join us next week when the regular host will be back with a few new episodes of original programming.
You're listening to Suspense on CKUW 95.9 FM, bringing the issues of youth in and from care, from their lives to your minds.
All right. Hello. Hello, everybody. We are System Kids on CKUW 95.9 FM, downtown Winnipeg at the University of Winnipeg. We are live and in studio. It is me and my co-host, Faith.
Woot woot.
So thank you so much for joining in today. Today is October 8th, 2024. It's a beautiful sunshiny day outside. I'm actually like loving this, like the last wind of summer. Okay, so without further ado, let's get into it. So you can find us at Voices, Manitoba's Youth and Care Network. We are located on the third floor at 61 Juno Street. You can give us a phone call at 204-982-4956, or you can call us toll-free anywhere in Manitoba at 1-866-982-4956. You can also reach out to us on any of our social media platforms. We're on Instagram. It's at Voices, M-Y-I-C-N. We're on Facebook at Voices MB. And we're on X at Voices MYICN as well. You can also email us askask@voices.mb.ca. So yeah, if you want to get a hold of us, that is where you can find us. And without further ado, we're going to jump into our icebreaker because we always start the show with a great icebreaker. So today, our icebreaker is Rose and Thorn. So Faith, you're up first. What is your Rose and Thorn of this day, this week, this month, this year?
I'll just stick with the day. My Rose today was that I got to shake hands with Wob Canoe today.
Oh,
unexpectedly, I did not wake up this morning thinking that was going to happen, but it did.
That's fantastic.
So I'm feeling pretty rosy from that. My thorn is that my car is currently in the shop again.
Oh, no.
Every time someone asks me this question, it is that my car is broken. but all is going to be well. It's getting fixed right now, so we'll be back on the road soon. So look out, everybody.
What I'm hearing is don't ask this question and your car will stop breaking.
That's exactly it. Just know my thorn is that my car is broken. What about you, Lynn?
Well, my rose is similar to your rose. I did not get to shake Wob Canoe's hand, but I got to shake Nahani Fontaine's hand. And
ooh,
that was pretty cool as well. So I know we'll talk a little bit more about that in a little bit. For me, my thorn is honestly also my car. I am trying to figure out how to afford winter tires for my car. Because winter tires are expensive and cost money and need time, and you have to take your car into the scary shop. And I just feel like if I take it into the shop to put the tires on, they're going to tell me that everything else is broken with it, and it's going to cost me $1 million.
Mechanics are so intimidating.
They can be. And I don't know anything about cars, so I feel like that's just they're using my ignorance against me sometimes.
That's
no
a
fault
common
of their
story.
Own. But yes.
Oh. If anyone heard my phone ringing, that was actually the car shop calling me. What great news.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm going to turn that phone off now.
Well, we'll keep our fingers crossed that Faith's car is in good working order when we get out of here. Okay, so let's talk quickly. Thank you for sharing your rose and thorn for today. But let's keep this show moving because we've got lots to talk about and not a whole lot of time. Let's talk about Voices October calendar. So our leadership team meetings will resume at the end of October. The leadership team meets Wednesdays at 4:30 p.m. October to June and is open to young people in and from care from the ages of 14 to 24 who want to learn or practice different ways to be a leader in our community. I would highly recommend you come out. We feed you, we give you bus tickets, and we talk about just some of the things that we'd like to make changes in our community, our policies, our systems, everything that we deal with on a day-to-day. So how can we use our voices to make change? We also have some Manitoba Moose tickets coming up. We have 4 tickets to the October 26th game versus Rockford Icehawks. If you would like to reserve some tickets, give us an email at ask@voices.mb.ca. Again, that's ask@voices.mb.ca. And finally, I have a sad note about our retreat. Our retreat was meant to be this coming weekend, but due to low low registrations, we've decided to break up the activities and do them over the next few months. So our retreats are usually a weekend of learning, laughing, and making connections, usually hosted by a camp outside of Winnipeg or transformed into urban reserves or retreats if needed, just like we had done for this one. Unfortunately, we're not able to do it over a weekend, but we can definitely do it one activity October, November, and December. So I'll be talking about those on our next show and when those dates will be. Okay, and I think that will take us into our theme.
And today's theme is very exciting. It's a topic that I particularly enjoy. I believe it's very important to talk about financial literacy, in particularly financial anxiety. So today's show, we are talking about financial literacy, and we have a wonderful interview coming up with Amanda Keller to talk about financial anxiety and financial stress, as well as some financial resources. We'll get into a little more of an introduction about Amanda in the interview, but just know she's amazing. She has done so much work for child welfare, so incredibly educated, so well-spoken, and she knows what she's talking about. So stay tuned for that.
Woo, woo. All right, thank you. So we're going to hop into our rights highlight here. Okay, so again, last week we talked about how we're going to be doing 2 rights, and I really love, I didn't notice the similarities in them and how they're interconnected. So we're doing Article number 2 of the UNCRC, which is the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child, and UNDRIP, which is United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. So Article 2 of the UNCRC is that you have the right to protection against discrimination. And the Article 2 of UNDRIP is Indigenous peoples and individuals are free and equal to all other peoples and individuals and have the right to be free from any kind of discrimination in the exercise of their rights, in particular that based on their Indigenous origin or their identity.
And let's ask ourselves, why is this important for youth in care? And I just want to start by saying that discrimination causes psychological harm. It can cause anxiety, depression, and other mental health issues. It is something that needs to be taken seriously. It has long-term consequences if people are discriminating or getting discriminated against. It is important to identify discrimination if someone is treating you differently because of your status of being in care, because of the color of your skin. You need to tell someone that you trust and advocate for yourself and understand that it is your right to not have that happen to you. This is going to harm you. You do not deserve that. So make sure we are speaking up when this injustice is happening. Tell someone you feel comfortable telling.
Awesome. Thank you so much for giving us that reflection. I always love your reflections.
Oh, thanks, Lynn.
Okay, moving along because we're running out of time here. We have a community connection, and Faith is going to tell us all about our favorite community connection for financial resources, Seed Winnipeg.
Seed.
Yes. Take it away.
So Seed is a nonprofit agency that fights poverty in Winnipeg. How amazing is that? So their vision is a world where opportunities exist for all people and communities to realize their hopes. Their mission is to build strong communities and increase opportunities for people through financial empowerment programs and services. So Seed has 5 pillars of financial empowerment. The first one is financial information, education, and counseling. The second one is help accessing income-boosting benefits and tax credits. The third one is safe and affordable financial products and services. The fourth one is access to savings and asset-building opportunities, including business ownership. And the fifth one is consumer awareness and protection. Seed works in partnership with over 100 organizations in Manitoba to deliver customized financial empowerment programs. One program that Seed has that I really would like to touch on is their Saving Circle. In this program, participants receive $3 for every dollar they save. So $250 saved within a period of 6 months qualifies for $750 of matching funds for a total of $1,000. That $1,000 is used to purchase an asset goal. So that could be a car, that could be a tuition, something that is positive and is going to benefit you. It is a really great program for anyone that wants to start their savings foundation. They are located at 80 Salter Street, Winnipeg, Manitoba, and their phone number is 204-927-9935.
Heck yeah, we love Seed.
Yes.
Woo-woo. Okay, we have just over 5 minutes to talk about the CSA apology today. So I'm going to let you lead with that.
Sure.
And tell us what happened today at the Ledge.
Lynn and myself were both there today. So essentially, the government of Manitoba was apologizing for the children's special allowance that was held back from children in care from the years of 2005 to 2019. There is information on the CSA settlement online. Find it all there. Minister Nahani Fontaine gave the apology today. It was unexpected. That's what I can say about it, that this just kind of came up and we all showed up to it. And it's amazing that this was able to happen today, that there was some accountability taken for what had happened. And now we can start the process of moving forward with child welfare and how we treat and care for our children in care.
Yes.
The legislative building is absolutely gorgeous.
Oh my gosh,
I must say that. I was in awe walking by it. A funny story quickly, my Uber driver dropped me off at the wrong address. And then I was waving at him, like, hey, I don't think this is it. And he just drove away. So I was like, okay. So I was walking around, I'm like, oh, that's it. Obviously, that's the Ledge, and this is a giant building, gorgeous building. It was nice to see everybody there. There's a lot of familiar faces for us as we all work very closely. There were lots of youth there. Yeah, it's just a really nice day today.
Yeah, it was. And speaking of people that we saw, other than Wap Canoe and Nahani Fontaine, we saw a fellow alumni of CARE. I'm not going to call them out and, like, name them or anything, but it was just so cool to know that Nahani is a former youth from CARE. Mm-hmm. I think she said another member was a former youth from CARE, and our host, our guide, was a former youth from CARE. So it's just so good to see that representation in the legislative building and in politics and in those spaces. It made me feel a lot more at ease, because I don't know about you, but like when I go into those spaces, it just reminds me of like how little pea I am, you know, like I feel like a little tiny
formal
guppy in the biggest ocean with all these sharks. So
absolutely. No, it was very nice. Yeah, there's a lot of changes happening in child welfare. It's very exciting.
Yes, it is. So yeah, just a shout out to the province of Manitoba for inviting us and allowing us, you know, in that space. I thought it was really cool that this is the second time ever in history of Nahani's career, at least, that they've allowed people who weren't elected in the chamber on the floor. So you were the second group of folks that were allowed in there, and that was just so cool.
Making history.
Heck,
let's go.
Yes. Woo-woo. Okay. I'm trying to think. We've got 3 minutes here.
Okay, 3 minutes before our big interview.
Yes.
All right. Briefly, I did skip over the history of Seed, so I will just go over that now since we have a little bit of time.
There we go.
We all want to know the history of these nonprofit organizations that are fighting poverty.
Of course.
Where
they do.
Did they start?
Grassroots, let's go.
So Seed Winnipeg was formed in the late 1980s as a result of a major study into the economic development needs of Winnipeg's inner city. After a number of years of searching for resources, Seed opened its doors in January 1993 with two staff on Ellis Avenue in the West End. Over the years, Seed has developed a strong track record in program innovation and collaboration, in addition to joint program delivery with organizations across Manitoba. Seed's programs have been replicated by community-based agencies in Ontario, Alberta, and BC. Wow, Ontario is doing what we're doing. Let's go. That's awesome.
That's awesome. Yes. Mm-hmm. No, I love that. And financial, as we're about to learn in our interview coming up, financial literacy and having those resources and those tools to put in your tool belt are so important. Absolutely. I don't think I'd be halfway where I am financially if I had not reached out to the lovely folks at Seed to help me with my, what I used to call a dumpster fire of a financial situation. It's no longer a dumpster fire. Might be a dumpster. It's not on fire. So
it's not often talked about how difficult it is to manage finances, and that's why I'm so glad we're talking about this today, because it seems easy, like 1 + 1 = 2. You save money and you have money, but there are so many forces in the way of allowing that to happen for so many of us. You can work as hard as you can and still be in poverty. So it's just understanding our emotional relationships with money, and you know, why it's difficult to save. Why do we binge spend? Why do we hoard? Mm-hmm. But that'll all be discussed today. I'm not going to give too much away yet.
Okay, well, thank you, because I'm also super excited. So let's just get into our song. We have a song before we get into our interview. Faith picked out this song. It's called The Spark by William Prince.
Yeah, let's represent. William Prince is from Winnipeg.
Oh my gosh, is he really?
He is, and he's amazing. Yeah, his voice like puts me to bed, but in a good way. It's soothing. Okay. It's so nice.
Okay, well, let's give it a listen. Let's see here.
So am I dreaming? Or is this just how we're living now? Refuse to wake, 'cause I have never been this close. You always think I'm leaving before I've had the chance to stay. Darling, it'll be okay if you look me in the eyes. If you look me in the eyes, I sing now. Don't be afraid of the fire, babe. I'd never let you burn. And all these bridges we cross, all that water underneath. When the ashes of lost love make it hard to breathe. My love, if we burn, would you burn right next to me? And there's so much revealed where you take the time to know me for who I am, not just who I am. Don't be afraid of the fire, babe. I'd never let you burn. And all these bridges we cross, all that water underneath. When the ashes of lost love make it hard to breathe. My love, if we burn, would you burn right next to me? And I was in the dark the day that I met you. Now you expect me just to forget you. Act like the fire never burned. It was my solstice, my refuge. Sitting on the sun, I was so nervous to let you share with me this pain. Reason I don't take a day off. My intentions, they were pure. I'm just a beacon for chaos. That fire ever burn, just let it burn. I said if that fire ever burn, just let it burn. I sang, don't be afraid of the fire, babe. I never let you burn. All these bridges we cross, all that water underneath. When the ashes of lost love make it hard to breathe. My love, if we burn, would you burn?
one right next to me. And is it safe to say you are? Oh, babe, you're the flame, the fire, but most of all, you're the spark.
All right, fam. Today's guest is Amanda Keller. Amanda is an alumnus of group care turned researcher. A few of Amanda's studies and academic articles include Understanding Financial Anxiety for Foster Youth, Case Studies on Life After Residential Care, Exploring Perceptions of Genetic Risk, and Transmission of Substance Use Disorders, and many, many more. Amanda attended Ohio University as an undergraduate, where she was a McNair Scholar and recipient of the National Science Foundation Fellowship. Amanda has also attended McGill University for her Master of Science in the Department of Psychiatry as a Rotary Ambassadorial Scholar. Amanda is the founder of Care Jeunesse, a grassroots peer support organization for alumni care in Quebec. Kind of like Voices, eh? She also was a clinician and worked with youth aging out of care in Quebec for 8 years as a case manager. And Amanda uses a multidisciplinary and mixed method approach to examine child welfare policies. Amanda is a trailblazer for transformative change in child welfare. And now, without further ado, the distinguished Amanda Keller.
Hi, Amanda. It is such an honor to have you on our show today. How has Winnipeg been treating you?
Winnipeg has been really great. Thank you so much for having me. The University of Manitoba was hosting a conference, so I came out here for that. And Voices has been very welcoming.
You do have quite the resume for work in child welfare. To what do you credit your drive to have accomplished as much as you have in terms of all your work and research in child welfare?
If I'm honest, I think it's anger. I was so severely traumatized. And when I went into placement, I was abused in placement in multiple ways. And I couldn't believe when I aged out and I figured out that, you know, I was misdiagnosed and I was over-medicated and it caused medical problems, that nobody had to be responsible, because it was within, like, what they called the norms of care. And so I just started like thinking, how did they get it so wrong? And like, this shouldn't be legal. And so I sort of thought, I need to change the norms of care. And that's what I've been trying to dedicate my career to.
Yes, anger can be quite the motivator. When it's channeled in the right way, we can accomplish a lot with that. I like what you say about the norms of care. I like to kind of think of it like a stereotype almost, or an expectation. And then we have former alumnus of care as yourself who just go above and beyond. And, you know, even with all the unseen forces in your way, you still, you know, push through and you let that anger drive you to learn as much as you could about child welfare. And in doing so, educating all of us on what the real norms are. So nowadays, there are quite a few options for former youth in care to assist them with post-secondary funding. Did you utilize any bursaries or scholarships that supported alumni from care with their studies while you were attending university?
Yes. So I have been relatively fortunate with scholarships. I don't know that I could give an exact number of how much funding I've gotten over the like my full studies. I'm just now at the end of my PhD studies and I end up getting a big scholarship for that. But it would be like for sure over $200,000 worth of scholarship funds I've gotten. And the thing that's sort of interesting about that, so only, I think, of all of that money, there was maybe $12,000 that was targeted to alumni of care. And that was really just in my undergrad education in my last 2 years. I got some funding that was for that. But otherwise, I just kind of made it a hobby of applying for grants. There was like this time when I was really little, I didn't think college was for me. I was sort of like a difficult kid in a really difficult home environment. And one of my siblings was like that kid that, you know, does everything great in school, and they kind of try to outshine all the dysfunction at home. And I was like kind of the bad kid that like is detracting from the bad things going on at home by being bad. And so we had these really different family roles, which are common in dysfunctional families. And so everybody thought like my older sister was like destined for college, and nobody really thought very much of me, I don't think. And so I never really thought about college until my placement in residential care. And I had this staff member, you know, over the course of my year in that placement, they kept telling me, "You're so smart. You should think about college. You're so smart. You should think about college." And they even got me into like this summer program for kids that come from low income families at a university. And so I did that summer program for like a month, and I got to interact with all the college students that worked it. And I thought, you know what? They're right. I am smart enough to go to college. So when I left that placement, I was 15, and I was so like, I thought like, this is my way out of this mess. And I really like latched so hard onto that idea that every year I wrote as many scholarships as I could find that I was qualified for. And probably my first 20 applications, I didn't get any of them. But my final year in high school, I got 5 really small ones. And then it just steamrolled from that. So it was like one for 250, one for 500. But once you have like 2 and then you're applying for another one that's a little bit bigger, they think like, oh, wow, she got a scholarship. And so if I could say this, it's like, yes, apply for the funding for former foster youth and our group care alumni, if it exists where you are. But at the same time, like, don't discount those other grants. And even if it's really small and you think like, what's $250 going to get me in the grand scheme of things? Because it can lead to so much more that like apply to the small ones that other people don't notice. Because at the end of the day, like, I'm sure that, you know, the first big scholarship I got was because I had 8 little ones. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. No, and that really just goes to show, you know, you play the odds of probability that you're going to have to apply for 20 or more, and maybe you'll get 2 of those. And at the end of the day, that's going to help you out. And I also like what you're saying there, that, you know, in that home where it was a little dysfunctional and you were reacting to that, what shifted was your own belief in your ability to go to school, right? When people start recognizing and pointing it out, like, hey, you're smart, you should pursue this. And then it's the belief in yourself that shifts that. And you realize, okay, maybe if I can learn enough about this, like, I can become something, I can do something with this. And knowledge really is power. And I just really like part of your story there that, you know, if you believe you are competent and capable, that's all that matters. You have to believe it in yourself and you can do it.
I just really love the idea of applying for the smaller scholarships, because a lot of people, like you said, look over those scholarships. And in my experience, my $200 scholarship bought 3 of my textbooks for my first year that I wouldn't have otherwise been able to have the physical copy of. I would have only been able to have the rented online edition for 80 days or whatever it is. So those small scholarships are so valuable when you're first starting off too, because it just gives you that momentum to keep pushing forward and keep being able to pursue those things. And at Voices, we have our new motto, I would say, is we can do hard things. And I think post-secondary is one of the hardest things for young people from care to just jump into, because it's something so unlike a lot of the experiences that we've had. So it's really inspirational to hear that you can do hard things, we can do hard things, and we can all do hard things.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I think like one of the reasons I've been successful with this is because 9 times out of 10, there's always every once in a while where I get my heart set on something. But 9 times out of 10, when I'm doing these applications, I do my best, I submit it, and then I forget about it. So that like when it comes in, I'm just pleasantly surprised, you know, like, because if you get devastated every time they reject an application, then you're not going to keep doing it. And so, like, I think you have to think of applying for funding like a game and just see it as sort of fun, and don't get like too caught up in any one award. Instead, like, just apply for all of them. And remember, like, even if you only get the smallest one this year and you only get 100 or 200 or 500 and you think like that is bad, if you're in your first or second year, like, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. Because the next year you can do the same thing and you could get like double or triple what you got last year. And so, like, don't give up and don't doubt yourself.
Absolutely. And also, it's just always good to have plan A, B, C, D, E all the way through. And receiving a scholarship or bursary is kind of like a bonus. And I understand that some people are in places where you have to be heavily reliant on it. But like you said, if you let that disappointment deter you from applying, then that's going to, you know, make it difficult to receive stuff in the future. You have done a lot of research on financial literacy. So there have been a lot of settlements across the province lately. Do you have any advice for folks receiving compensation from these settlements, as there are large lump sum amounts going out to a lot of people right now?
So I think if you get a lump sum, don't spend it all right away unless you really need something. And so you have to sort of look at the difference between a need and a want, right? You need food, you need housing, you might need transportation. Look at what you need and what you want. And certainly if you have needs, get yourself whatever it is that you need that you think a parent should be getting you, get that. But then, like, hold on to it for a minute. Like, there's such a power of like compounding interest that if you were to take, like, okay, let's make a hypothetical payment of $50,000, right? And so if you got $50,000, you could blow that in a year. Like, you could move into a house that's really expensive and you could get yourself a used car, and the used car could be costly, and you could buy like restaurants and go on a vacation. And then after that, that whole $50,000 could be gone. Or you could take that $50,000 and say, you know what, I want to look at right now, there are some things I need. I'm going to take $10,000. From that $50,000, and I am going to buy myself those things that I really need and really want. And then the $40,000, I am going to put into an interest-bearing account. You could have that money stretch for years. So my thought is, for sure, get yourself anything that you need, but don't spend it all right away, because you could, if you end up getting interest or you end up getting dividends from investments, you could live off of a decent settlement for a long time.
Absolutely. I also think with when you get an opportunity to kind of change your life with a lump sum of money, it's important to make that shift into long-term thinking versus short-term. And we can all understand why, you know, some of us are living day to day, just short-term thinking. It's hard to switch that narrative in our head to, okay, I can plan for next year now. I can plan for 5 years now. And just planning big goals for yourself and understanding the importance of saving that money, and that you can make it grow and you can invest it. And this can get you through for a very, very long time, if not for the rest of your life, if you handle it properly.
Back when I had a little, I thought that I needed a lot. A little was overrated, but a lot was a little too complicated. See, zero didn't satisfy me, a million didn't make me happy. That's when I learned the lesson that it's all about your perceptions. Hey, are you a popper or a superstar? So you act, so you feel, so you are. It ain't about the size of your car, it's about the size of the faith in your heart. There's hope, it doesn't cost a thing to smile. You don't have to pay your life, you better thank God for that. There's hope, it doesn't cost a thing to smile.
You don't have to pay to lie. You better thank God for that. There's hope.
In the back country of Brazil, I met a young brother that made me feel that I could accomplish anything. You see, just like me, he wanted to sing. He had no windows and no doors. He lived a simple life and was extremely poor. On top of all of that, he had no eyesight. But that didn't keep him from seeing the light. He said, us are like in the USA. And all I did was complain. He said, living here is paradise. He taught me paradise is in your mind. You know that there's hope. It doesn't cost a thing to smile. You don't have to pay to laugh. You better thank God for that. There's hope. It doesn't cost a thing to smile. You don't have to pay to laugh. You better thank God for that. There's hope.
Every time I turn on the TV,
there's hope.
Somebody's acting crazy.
There's hope.
You let it, it'll drive you crazy.
There's hope.
But I'm taking back my power today.
There's hope.
Gas prices, they just keep on rising.
There's hope.
Surviving, keep living our truth and do the best we can do, cause there's hope.
It doesn't cost a thing to smile. You don't have to pay to laugh. You better thank God for that. There's hope. It doesn't cost a thing to smile. You don't have to pay to laugh. You better thank God for that. There's hope. Stand up for your right. Pay to laugh. Oh, you better thank God for that.
So in your research paper, Missing the Mark, The Importance of Financial Anxiety and Financial Skills Training for Foster Youth, you describe the importance of financial literacy workshops in assisting alumni youth understand their relationship with money. Can you explain to our audience why you believe financial literacy workers could benefit our understanding of finances?
Yeah, so this came out of my own experiences, but then also as I was working with youth in difficulty, I saw different people with different financial situations. And I realized that we're not doing justice by young people when, you know, I don't know how many of you participated in financial literacy training in independent living skills training programs, but I had to go through a module on financial literacy. And so like what they taught me in financial literacy was how to write a check. They took me to the bank and had me open a bank account, and they taught me the basics of budgeting. And then that was sort of it. And then they're like, okay, you're left to your own devices. But my family had been in like really dire poverty. Like my mom and my stepdad were substance users, and like there were times where we couldn't afford food, hygiene products, power would go out. Like I would go to school stinky. I would go to school greasy. And like this, like experience of having had been hungry, like it deeply affected my relationship with money. So I was always fearful. And I had a daughter when I was 25. And I was so fearful that I would raise my daughter in the same circumstances. And I knew I didn't have family to fall back on. So I knew that like, if I got in a financial hardship, I wouldn't be able to call anyone and be like, I'm gonna miss my rent payment. or like I don't have enough money for food this month, I knew there was nobody there for me. And so knowing A, there's nobody there for me, and B, like, you know, I wasn't earning that much. I was a young mom, right? So I had just this like overwhelming anxiety with money for so much of my life. And it made it so that like when I could choose between healthy food and unhealthy food, I would choose unhealthy food because it was cheaper. When I could choose between buying myself a car and taking public transit and having a commute that's 2 hours versus 45 minutes, I chose the 2 hour commute. And it's okay, I think, to be, it's even good to be frugal and to make these choices that are like, you know, when you have a long-term goal and you're saying like, yes, I'm going to do this commute, which is longer and maybe less convenient, but that's because I want to do this in the future. Well, that's fine. But I was doing it with like a mentality of fear. And so in my situation, I was like hoarding resources, fearful of the day that I'm going to be in poverty again. And I would also work with youth that sort of did the flip side. And so they would like, let's say they're on welfare and they got their check the first of the month. They would spend the whole thing the day of, like they would literally like take a welfare check for $1,300 and go to, well, that would be like a disability check, but they, so they take their disability check for $1,300 and they wouldn't pay their rent with it, which is the first thing it should have gone to. They would go to the spa and they would get themselves like a designer coat. And when I would look at their budgets and like when I would do a financial evaluation with them, I'd be like, what are you thinking? And they're like, well, if I don't do it now, I'll never have it. And so I started thinking about this idea that like binge spending like that is a form of financial anxiety, and hoarding money to the point that it's like to your life's detriment is a form of financial anxiety. And so I almost think of it like, you know, when people have an eating disorder where they like don't eat, or let's say they overeat or they binge eat, like all of those things are forms of like food anxiety, right? And so they have like whole clinics that are geared towards eating disorders. And nobody would tell an eating disordered person like, oh, you just need to learn about calories in and calories out and it'll be just fine. It's like, no, they have to work through their anxiety. And so I think with financial education, if you only like teach someone how to budget and write a check and then say, have a good day, and you never like even allow them to talk about the fact that they're afraid of not having enough, or that they're afraid that they'll never get the opportunities that their peers do in school, then you're like missing an opportunity to just sort of say like, hey, like, it's okay if in the past you didn't have, and that affects your spending now. Like, it's a part of the journey, right? And so healing that financial anxiety for me has been like, it's taken me a very long time. And but I have to say, like, I'm doing a lot better with it now than I ever used to.
Thank you for sharing that, Amanda. That really, really sits powerfully with me, as well as I am the opposite. I am the spend it all, save nothing. I am here for a good time. I'm not here for a long time. I'm not here for a stable time. Nothing in the system told me I was here for a stable time. So ayo, YOLO, right? But I've learned how to work within those confines of my impulsivity. I have mental health struggles. And one of the symptoms of my borderline personality disorder is impulsiveness and recklessness. So I know if I'm going into certain stores to leave my bank card at home, I threw my credit card into the back of my storage closet, all the way at the back, just chucked it in there randomly, because I know that if I need it in an emergency, it's there. But I have to clean my whole storage closet to get it. And if I really, really want to tackle that storage closet, I must really need whatever I'm buying, right? So for a car payment or my rent, I will clean that storage closet. But if I want a new Michael Kors purse, or I want to go get my nails done, girl, I don't have time for that. That is a whole mess in there. That is a jungle. So just learning kind of ways to work within my personality, my confines of my ridiculousness of spending. I know I have an addiction to getting my nails done.
and going to the nail salon every couple of weeks and getting my nails done when I'm really rough on my nails too, spending $140, $150 after, you know, you tip and you have a nice conversation, you spend 3 hours there. I watched a bunch of YouTube videos and I ordered a kit online from Amazon for $12.99. And now I do my nails, you know, every 4 or 5 days, I'll be repainting them or redoing them because it just lasts a little bit longer. And I've picked up those skills. I also know that if I really needed to, I could fall back on those skills to make some money, maybe out of my living room or something, because a lot of folks do things like that. So just thinking about how can I turn my impulsiveness into a more responsible impulsiveness. If I can't combat the impulsiveness entirely, how can I work within my budget? And if I'm picking up new skills working within my budget, how can I turn those skills into something that could be lucrative or making money for myself in the future? So it's hard to be frugal when you're a more frivolous person. So just kind of learning and listening, I find, to these stories of folks who may be on the other flip side, while they're relatable, I have a hard time sitting there going, oh, but she saved money. I can't even open a savings account because I don't even have money to put in the $5 for the savings account to be opened most days. So I just really think on the flip side that it's important for us folks to listen to what you folks have to say.
Kind of brings me into what are the symptoms of financial anxiety? Because I know someone who has generalized anxiety that's related again to some of my mental health disorders, that I never really thought about how my relationship with money might be a separate type of anxiety. So what sets financial anxiety apart from like regular anxiety?
If it's severe enough that it's interfering in your life, like I was saying, like, so I was hoarding everything I could, fearful of the day when I would need it, to the point that I was not living a remotely healthy lifestyle. I wasn't buying myself the things that I needed. So I was essentially living like way below my means in a way that was unhealthy, if that fits. And then you have the other extreme of someone living way above their means. Right. And that, too, is sometimes, I mean, it's not always about financial anxiety. It could be about like impulsivity or ADHD and just losing track of things. But I think that the biggest thing that stands out to me, which actually really isn't in the literature, is this idea of it's affecting your decisions in a way that limits your life somehow. Because like, as an example, if you spend all your money and you can't afford rent or you can't afford food at the end of the month, but you actually had enough. Because it's like it's one thing to be talking about financial anxiety, but then like not acknowledging that some young people that age out of care. And when I age out of care, I was in poverty. So like when you're in poverty, I think that this is not really a fair conversation, if this makes sense. Like you can't heal your financial anxiety when you are currently living below the poverty line. When you start to come out of it, like if you start to come out of it, there can be a point in time where you're making decisions based on what you've learned your whole life about money. And then it's like negatively affecting your life. So I would say like not being able to sleep because you're thinking about money, not being able to, make rent because of how you, spend your money, not being able to, feel comfortable buying yourself what you need. Those symptoms would be things that I would say like, okay, your relationship with money is challenged. It's not a disorder. So just like anyone can have financial anxiety. And even there are a lot of rich people with financial anxiety. That's another sort of like oxymoron, because sometimes we think, you know, I don't know, a billionaire, like how could they have financial anxiety? But the truth is, part of the reason that some people have like so much money is because to them, no amount of money is enough, right? Like they can never get over the financial anxiety that maybe they were raised in, that maybe their grandparents taught them because they survived a war. Like anyone at any income level can have financial anxiety, because the thing to keep in mind is that money is only a tool, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you're like not using the tool the way it's intended, and you're not living like a full and healthy life. And yet that's another thing I think that's sort of interesting when I think back on my hoarding days, when I was like just so fearful. And I would have friends at work say things like, "Hey, Amanda, like, do you want to come out to dinner with me?" And I would look up the menu and I would see like all the menu, like the dinner is $25 and the drinks are $15 or something like this. So nothing that's like too extreme. And if I'm honest, I had the money in my bank account, technically, but I would say, oh, I can't. Or if I did go out, I would only get a soup, right? And so I would be like, I'm just going to get like the appetizer because this meal is so expensive. And when I was doing that, when I was like 19, okay, that was really logical. Like I didn't have family. I had no financial support. I was living off, you know, financial aid and not that much of it. And so when I was making those decisions in those days, that makes sense. But when I was like, let's say in my mid 30s and I had a stable job and I didn't have like an amazing income, I don't want to imply that I did. But when I think about, I had enough though to survive. Like I was on like a living wage, and I would tell my friends regularly, I couldn't go to eat with them because the restaurant they picked was a normal price restaurant. And then when I really think like, I could have lost job opportunities because of that, because that's like not fun. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not fun to be out with someone who's like, oh, I can't really buy myself a drink because I can't afford it. So mm-hmm. It's like not necessarily that those people would be like, well, we're going to exclude her because she said no. But in hindsight, like, let's say that they chose who they're going to take out to lunch next time. They're not going to take me. And then at these like dinners, sometimes that's where you network with people. That's where you find new job opportunities. And I would constantly be staying home out of fear that I didn't have enough. Yeah. So I would say like, that's really severe anxiety.
Fam, thank you so much for tuning in today to our amazing show. That was part one of our interview with Amanda Keller. Stay tuned for next week for part two. So thank you for tuning in and supporting Community Driven Radio. Stay tuned for the next show after ours, which is Sonic Blanket. Here's some amazing stuff. And just keep in mind that we would love to hear from you. So send us an email at ask@voices.mb.ca. Again, that's ask@voices.mb.ca. Or give us a call anywhere from, anywhere toll-free in Manitoba at 1-866-982-4956. Until next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Our original volunteer-made programming drives the fresh and passionate sound you tune in for. This is CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg.
There's a real need in our society for bridging the gap. We have a show that does just that, called Just That, Bridging the Gap, here on CKUW 95.9 FM. On Thursdays at 10:30 a.m., you can listen to clinical and registered psychologist Dr. Cyrus Dirksen sharing some pretty meaty info to help you build that bridge.
Take a moment and just be in your own experience and kind of let go of the things in the future, let go of the things in the past, and try to watch what's happening to you right now. You can actually take a moment and just think about what it feels like to be you right now in whatever place you're sitting or standing. And it can be very healing to do that.
Bridging the Gap, Thursdays, 10:30 a.m. on CKUW 95.9 FM. We'll be right back.